have to fear is...
In war, there is no substitute for victory.
Let us never negotiate out of fear.
We stand undivided, forever united, fighting hand in hand for the liberty we burn, for glory and honor, for our sons and daughters, ever mindful of the lessons we've learned. Let the torch of freedom burn.
Welcome to the intersection of faith and politics. This is Wall Builders Live with David Barton and Rick Green. Thanks so much for listening today and every other day. Hope you're getting us online at wallbuilderslive.com or with one of our local stations across the country. If you're listening online and you haven't actually looked to see which stations we're on around the country, it's right there on our website at wallbuilderslive.com. We're probably in a community near you. And if not, take some links to the program and send them to some local stations there and ask them to pick up Wall Builders Live. We are about to begin a special program for you this week. If you've been listening the last couple of months, we've introduced you a couple of times to Constitutional Live with David Barton and Rick Green. This is our Constitution program. We call it the Quick Start Guide to the Constitution because in about 12 hours of material, we take you on a crash course through the Constitution, the Declaration, and the founding principles of America. We spend about half of our time in Philadelphia, in the room, in Independence Hall, where the Constitution was framed and where our Declaration occurred. And then the other half of the time we spend in the Wall Builders Library actually bringing those documents to life for you. David pulls stuff off the shelf and just makes it so amazing to find out what these guys were actually saying, what they were doing, what was going on in the world at the time, and what led to them putting in place these incredible founding documents that made our nation so successful and so free. So it's an incredible program, Constitution Alive with David Barton and Rick Green. But we want to bring it to you, our listeners here on Wall Builders Live, and give you a chance to enjoy it as well. And so we've done a couple of the chapters here on Wall Builders Live, and we wanted to do one this week that was really applicable to what's happening out there in the news and in the world today. So we thought this week would be a good time to do Constitution Alive Segment 6, which is actually about the presidency, where we walk through the presidential powers, and we walk through Article 2 of the Constitution and what the proper role of the presidency is. We're even going to talk about the Electoral College and these other things. So it's I think, going to be a good time to cover this part of Constitution Alive. So what's going to happen is this will take 4 days for us to share this particular chapter out of Constitution Alive. And so make sure you tune in the rest of the week. And if for some reason you're going to miss a day, then just visit the website at wallbuilderslive.com and you can download those programs. But we also ask that you share these programs with your friends and family, because it's not enough for just you to get educated on the Constitution. You need to get the people around you educated as well, and also start teaching them how to take action to restore our constitutional republic. And that's what this program's about. So we're going to jump into Constitution Alive with David Barton and Rick Green. This is actually Section 6 out of Constitution Alive, where we talk about the presidency. Welcome back to Constitution Alive with David Barton and Rick Green. We've been talking about the Congress in the last couple of sections, and now we're going to start diving into the presidency.
But before we do that, I want to back up.
Yeah.
In the last lesson, you talked about science and promoting useful art.
Yeah.
Read that clause out of the Constitution.
All right, this is our workbook, so this is promoting the progress, right, is the section we want to go to. So in Article 1, Section 8, to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for a limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries.
Now, that's an interesting clause. If I tell you the word Noah Webster or Webster, what do you think of?
The dictionary.
Exactly.
Yes.
You don't think of a founding father. Noah Webster is responsible for that clause in the Constitution.
So he actually had influence on the Constitution.
He had huge influence. As a matter of fact, he's the second guy in America to call for the Constitutional Convention. Peletiah Webster was first, Noah Webster was second.
Really?
And he's the second guy to call for it, and then he did that in 1785. Then they assembled 1787, do it. He has direct influence. He met with all sorts of the delegates, met with George Washington, had dinner with him, all these different guys.
He was like a lobbyist.
He was like a lobbyist.
A lobbyist for the Constitution. Now, he wasn't a scientist, was he? I don't know much about the things that he did.
Noah Webster actually was a scientist.
Was he?
I mean, He's probably one of the top three educators in American history. And his deal was, all right, now that we've separated from Great Britain, if we don't educate American-wise, we're going to still think like British citizens, because what happened? We were still importing textbooks from Great Britain. And so our literature books, our grammar books, our spelling books, our history books, our government books all come from Great Britain. He said, no, we'll start thinking like British people rather than Americans. So he called for a revolution in education to match the revolution we'd had in our forms of government.
This is David Barton with another moment from America's history. Federal courts have made several amazing rulings recently, ordering the removal of a cross from a cemetery, banning religious holiday displays, removing the Ten Commandments from public view, prohibiting student prayers whether verbal or silent, and numerous other similar restrictive rulings. As one current justice has noted, the Supreme Court has now become, quote, a national board of theology. Our founding fathers would be astounded. They designed the First Amendment to keep the federal courts completely out of this issue. As Thomas Jefferson forcefully declared, I consider the federal government as prohibited by the Constitution from meddling with religious exercises. The First Amendment was designed to keep decisions on religious expression out of the federal courts and in the hands of the local communities.
For more information on God's hand in American history, contact Wall Builders at 1-800-8-REBUILD.
And so he starts writing textbooks like crazy. He's writing textbooks, and so he's very active as a founding father himself. He was a soldier in the Revolution. He was a legislator. He was a judge. Actually, he was a legislator in two states after the Revolution, a judge. So he's very much politically involved, but he understands how important education is. He wrote textbooks on meteorology, on animal husbandry, on economics, one of the best economic books out there, Noah Webster did, on medicine, one of the best layman's medicine books ever done. He wrote books on science, on government, on you name the subject. I mean, he probably wrote more textbooks than anybody in America on every area.
So he understood the importance of protecting your creation, what you've written,
that's
what you put on the market.
And by the way, after the Constitutional Convention was over, the Founding Fathers went to him and asked him to promote it and write pieces, and so he did. He's a big read, kind of like the Federalist Papers. He writes these pieces that went across the nation, were highly read by people, and why they should ratify the Constitution.
No kidding, I didn't know that.
So he's a big influence. But that part right there is the result of this book right here. Now this, I don't know if this is going to be good news or bad news. This is a spelling book. He came out with a spelling book in 1782.
This is one of his creations.
Noah Webster's spelling book. And remember, he wants this to be different from the British. So until this book came out in 1782, there was not a right way or a wrong way to spell a word in America. And that's why folks like John Trumbull, colonial governor, spelled his own last name six different ways. I have letters here, Rick, in this library, and if you'll read them phonetically, you say, that guy's from Georgia. Oh, he's from Boston. Because
these were his own way of, he spelled it different
well,
ways.
Well, everybody did in America. Yeah. So I've got a letter over there where it talks about D-A-A-W-G. Oh, dog. And if you can read it that way.
Yeah.
And so I got letters from John Jay, the Chief Justice, that are very much on the Maine, Boston kind of accent side. They add R's after their A's and the words that drop A's out. They pock the con, the yod.
Wow.
So you can literally read. And he's the guy who came out and said, no, Sanders. And he.
I can't imagine. I'm sorry. I was just thinking about him writing from, you know, from Virginia to Boston or wherever. And the difference in those letters, even in the committees of correspondence. I never thought about that. So there was probably...
There was no standard for spelling until this comes out. And then he says, and we're not spelling it the way the British do. And so the British, when they spell labor, L-A-B-O-U-R, he dropped out all the U's out of words and favor, F-A-V-O-U-R. So this is the deal. But now, this is his creation. You can't get it copyrighted in America because we're 13 states. And you got to go to every state.
He's got to go to each one.
You got to go to every state. So I can get this copyrighted in Massachusetts, but North Carolina doesn't like me. Or I can get this copyrighted up in Vermont, but you know what? New York doesn't like. And so how do you protect your creation? This is your property. Founding Fathers taught that this type of stuff, your intellectual property is as much your property as your real estate, as much as your money, anything else. And so he's the guy who got that part added. that, and again, read it again. Listen to what, and think about this.
And he must have thought that the Commerce Clause alone was not enough. So the Commerce Clause was to make sure that all 13 mm-hmm. states, you know, that you had that free flow of commerce.
But that doesn't give you protection.
But it doesn't protect
that. It lets
that,
him sell his books everywhere, yeah. but it doesn't protect his property.
So this was specifically to promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing, protecting that property for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. So he wasn't asking, like we talked about in that last chapter, he wasn't asking Congress or the federal government to pay for it.
No.
He wasn't asking for them to...
Protect my property.
Yeah, just protect it. Don't promote it by spending money to promote it. Just protect it.
That's right.
When somebody else tries
I'll promote it. I'll buy the ads in the newspaper. We got newspapers in here where he's selling this
where
book.
Where he's actually advertising this selling book. Wow.
He'll buy the ads, et cetera. And this did real well. More than 100 million copies over the life of from 1782 to 1932. But he promoted himself, 100 million copies. That's how come, and I don't know, maybe he's a hero, maybe he's a heel. If you don't like spelling, he's a heel. If you like spelling, but he's the guy.
I just appreciate, you know, one time we did a television show together and you broke out some spelling tests from back then and made me try to spell them on. So I just want to thank you for not doing that here.
Well,
no, I'm not even going to try.
I could let you try some of these spelling words.
Maybe I should test you.
And by the way, this is an elementary spelling book. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
I don't even try to pronounce
I can't pronounce
words.
Them, let alone That's spell right. them, That's no right. doubt about it.
It's no question. So,
all right, great point, though, because, again, it's back to original intent.
It is.
Because I didn't even know that that was the origin of it. I didn't know who it was, and I didn't know that it was, for him, it was specifically dealing with authorship mm-hmm. and books. But I'm sure he and Franklin, I can only imagine, they had to have discussions about science as well.
Well,
and
you
so
bet.
What a great, yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting. Franklin, the Founding Fathers had an attitude that you serve. And therefore, they believed that if someone came to you and said, you've got to run for office, you're not allowed to say no because that's selfish.
Wow.
If they've recognized that you're a leader and say, I want you in the legislature, if you say, no, I've got to spend time with my family or my job, that's being selfish.
Wow.
And so Benjamin Rush specifically quotes Romans 14:7 out of the Bible to say, no man lives and dies to himself. It's not your choice. You're here to serve other people.
Yeah.
And so that was their belief. And so Franklin, with all his inventions, never patented a single one.
Wow.
Because he believed that they all belonged to the public. He wanted to do it to help people. And so, you know, he could have been wealthy in a lot of ways. No, he invented all these cool things. And didn't patent any, but others did. It's a private property. They have
and
the
so
right
he
to
obviously
that.
Supported
he supported
their
that.
Property.
He's at the, he's at the convention, and, you know, and he supports Webster. Webster met with Franklin, and Franklin and Webster had discussions on spelling and other books. So it's part of it. And the other thing from the last lesson that we talked about duty. And, you know, the question was, well, if God's in charge of everything, why do we need to involve? And there's a really cool thing that I thought of that I pulled out. This is an election sermon, and probably folks don't know what an election sermon is.
Yeah, we don't get many of those anymore.
And we think it's a sermon on election, but not really.
Hmm.
For 170 years, this is a sermon that was preached in front. We started state legislative assemblies by having a joint session of legislature, House and the Senate, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, and a minister preach a sermon to them.
Oh, so this is after the election.
This is after
so
the election.
So this is not a sermon about the election coming up. This is after the election.
This is after the election.
Having a sermon with those who actually got elected.
That's right.
Ah.
And so this happened in Hartford. So this is Connecticut. Matthias Burnett is the guy who did the sermon. And 1801, my recollection, I think the governor at that time was John Trumbull.
Hmm.
And he was one of Washington's aide-de-camps in the Revolution. So we have some John Trumbull stuff back
He's got
there.
A statue at the Capitol, right?
Well, no, it's his dad that's got a statue.
Oh, that's his dad.
He's the son.
So it's the other Jonathan. All these Jonathan Trumbulls, I get confused.
It's like George Foreman.
Right.
You know, all of his kids were named John.
Call
so
them all
John Trumbull.
That's right. John. Yeah.
So what you have is in the sermon, and he talks to the legislators about the issues they're facing because the Bible gives guidance on every issue, economic issue, education, military, whatever. And he gets done with that, and then he looks up to all the citizens sitting in the balcony because this is all the new elected officials down here. And so there's citizens just filling the gallery up there. And what he says to them I find really profound. Now he's talking to the citizens, and he said, to God and posterity, you're accountable for your rights and your rulers. Now, a whole lot of Americans, they say, whoa, don't you blame those rulers on me. I didn't even vote last election.
Exactly.
Exactly.
No doubt.
He said, you will answer to God for these rulers right here, and you will answer to your kids as well.
Hey, guys, we want to let you know about a new resource we have at Wall Builders called The American Story. For so many years, people have asked us to do a history book to help tell more of the story that's just not known or not told today. And we would say very providentially, in the midst of all of the new attacks coming out against America, whether it be from things like the 1619 Project that say America is evil and everything in America was built off slavery, which is certainly not true, or things like even the Black Lives Matter movement, the organization itself, not the statement Black Lives Matter, but the organization that says we're against everything that America was built on and this is part of the Marxist ideology. There's so many things attacking America. Well, is America worth defending? Well, what is a true story of America? We actually have written and told that story, starting with Christopher Columbus, going roughly through Abraham Lincoln. We tell the story of America not as the story of a perfect nation or a perfect people, but the story of how God used these imperfect people and did great things through this nation. It's a story you want to check out. Wallbuilders.com, The American Story.
Let the torch of freedom burn.
That's what I was going to say. Posterity is not a word that's used very often.
No.
He's saying you're actually responsible for the current leaders, because the future generations are going to pay the price for what you elect.
Now, this goes to eschatology, and it deals with, people of faith understand this, it's a view of what they think is going to happen in the last days.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if they think Christ is going to return in the last days, whatever, they're just sitting around, too many are just sitting around waiting for that. The point with that is, you know what, regardless of what eschatology you hold, you're still told specifically in the scriptures, Luke 19:13, Jesus said, you occupy till I come. So the stewardship was there. If you think Christ is going to return today, great, but you'd be a steward till that time. So there's no checking out and saying, I don't have a duty, I'm waiting for
whether it's tomorrow or 50
it
years
doesn't
from
matter.
Now, today I do my duty.
And that's why, and these guys believe that. They definitely believe theologically Christ returned, but they also believe that if he didn't come when I want to, what I would do with posterity. And so that's why he said to God and posterity, you're accountable for your righteousness. Let's say that the end doesn't come when I think it's going to come. And so far, every generation since Christ was here thought he'd be in their generation.
Right,
They've all been wrong.
Yeah.
He says, let not your children have reason to curse you for giving up those rights and prostrating those institutions which your fathers delivered to you as a sacred palladium and which by the blessing of God have been peculiarly beneficial to your order, peace, and stability. He said, you'll answer to God, but you'll also answer the next generation. Don't let them curse you for having given up all these great rights we were entrusted. And that's the founding fathers believe that. John Adams, he said, posterity, you'll never know how much it cost my generation to preserve your freedom. Don't make me repent in heaven that I did what I did. You know, it's like, don't you make me sorry that I worked so hard to give you something.
That's a serious, I started to say burden. But it is.
It should be.
We should see that and say, hey, I've got a duty here that I need to be thinking about. I need to be investing in. So if you're going to do that right, if you're going to really do your children right and grandchildren right, you got to spend a little bit of time. So while we're studying all these things, but then study the candidates, know how they measure to these
that's
things.
That's right.
Invest in these things and fulfill that responsibility.
You know, studying the candidates probably take you a good 15 minutes
years. Plenty of tools out there now.
I don't know if I've got 15 minutes to look at a voter's guide or search the internet or, you know, that's just too much time. And see, that's the attitude that's going to keep us in trouble.
It is.
And if we don't get an attitude that says, you know what, it may take me 2 hours, but that's better than watching a TV program for 2 hours if I can save my country.
Yeah.
And that's the attitude
Absolutely.
We're going to have.
And 10 years ago, it was even more difficult because you didn't have as many voter guides.
That's
there
right.
weren't all these groups out there doing the
That's right.
Today,
it's
you can spend 15 minutes on the internet, find those voter guides, look at all those candidates. Well, one of those areas that we need to hold accountable is a president. So every 4 years, we choose a president, and we're going to choose someone that's going to have an impact on us in so many different ways. So let's get into that area of the presidency.
Let's go back to what we saw earlier, and that is looking at how the Constitution is laid out. Article 1, 2, and 3.
Kind of taking that step back again to see how the presidency fits into the whole
that's
thing.
Right.
Okay.
That's the second most important area. Congress is number one area, president's number two, and probably the most significant part of the presidential responsibilities is in Article 2 where it says to take care that the law shall be faithfully executed.
Yeah.
That's why he's called the executive branch. He executes the law. So the laws that have been passed by Congress and signed by the president for however many years, his purpose is to execute those laws. Now, when we do that, John Adams says, when you execute the laws as passed constitutionally, he had a great quote. He said, we're a government of laws and not of men. It doesn't matter who gets in office because you're bound by the laws that are there. But knowing human nature as they did and the way they set up guards against it, they also pointed out that it's going to be really easy for somebody to get in and try to run their own agenda through the executive branch.
Yeah.
And so he talked about it. This is what he said. He said, The interest of the people is one thing. It is the public interest. In other words, for the people, they want what's good for the people. They're not interested in agendas of different groups. The people have a public interest. He said, and where the public interest governs, it's a government of laws and not of men. When you're looking out for the good of the people themselves, you'll do what the laws say, not what you yourself say. You may have a different agenda. You may get elected on an agenda. But when you're looking out for the good of the people, you're going to uphold the laws that the people's representatives that they chose have passed, whether you agree with the law or not.
Yeah.
So that's let me read again. The interest of the people is one thing. It's the public interest. And when the public and where the public interest governs, it's a government of laws and not of men. But he said, however, the interest of a king or a party or a president is another thing. It is a private interest. And where private interest governs, it's a government of men and not of laws. Mm. If you elect a president who says, I'm going to take my pen and just rewrite what I want through executive orders, I'm going to use agencies to get what I want. I've got an agenda. I was elected with an agenda, and I'm going to cram that agenda through. It's no longer a government of laws. It's now a government of men, because that man is the small end of the funnel. He is deciding everything that the people need. It's not what the representatives say they need. I'll tell you what they need.
And that's ignoring the laws.
That's ignoring the laws.
Yeah.
And so that's why the most important responsibility for any president is to take care that the laws be faithfully executed. He's the guardian. He has a trust from previous generations. All the laws they passed, the War Powers Act goes back in the 1930s, but you know what? It's still on the books. And that means all the people for the last 70, 80 years want that law there. And so he keeps enforcing it, because that may not be what he personally wants. That's what America's wanted and kept for 80 years. And so whatever the law is, he's got to uphold that law.
And I guess it applies to the Constitution itself as well, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's still the laws of the people.
That's
what we've put in place. So he has to faithfully execute the laws as the Constitution says that it should be.
That's
done.
Right.
Right?
And I may not like freedom of the press if they attack me, but it doesn't matter. I've still got to uphold it. You know, I may not like freedom of conscience if you do something I don't agree with. That's all right. I still got to uphold it. And so that's what you look for in your public officials, people who put themselves to the side and say, I'm not the most important thing. You guys are. And this is what you've said. You've spoken with a collective voice, and I'm going to enforce your will. Now, there are occasions where that one thing here or one thing there you may have a conscience problem with. You know, Abraham Lincoln ignored the Supreme Court and Dred Scott decision because he did declare freedom for slaves in Washington, D.C., and the Supreme Court said you can't do that. You certainly have Thomas Jefferson with the Alien Sedition Act, says that's an absolutely bad law. I'm going to release everyone that was convicted under it, and they eventually repealed the law.
Yeah.
But he did it
in a constitutional way,
right,
by pardoning or commuting them.
That's right. He did it the right way, and he wasn't going in with his own agenda.
Yeah.
And so when you go in with your own agenda and say, I'm going to use all these agencies and I'm going to use every tool I have to get done what I want. So what you want is a government of laws, not of men, and that's where the president comes in. He'll be the one, more than any other entity in government, to decide whether it's a government of laws or a government of men by what he chooses to enforce and not enforce.
So to choose those presidents wisely, we've got to know what their proper role is and how they should be following the Constitution and what they do. That's how we can hold them accountable. So to learn more about Article 2 in the presidency, we're going to go back out to Philadelphia at Independence Hall. Have you ever wanted to learn more about the United States Constitution but just felt like, man, the classes are boring, or it's just that old language from 200 years ago, or I don't know where to start? People want to know, but it gets frustrating because you don't know where to look for truth about the Constitution either. Well, we've got a special program for you available now called Constitution Alive with David Barton and Rick Green, and it's actually a teaching done on the Constitution at Independence Hall in the very room where the Constitution was framed. We take you both to Philadelphia, the cradle of liberty, and Independence Hall, and to the Wall Builders Library, where David Barton brings the history to life to teach the original intent of our founding fathers. We call it the Quick Start Guide to the Constitution because in just a few hours through these videos, you will learn the Citizen's Guide to America's Constitution. You'll learn what you need to do to help save our constitutional republic. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it's going to inspire you to do your part to preserve freedom for future generations. It's called Constitution Alive with David Barton and Rick Green. You can find out more information on our website now at wallbuilders.com.
This is David Barton with another moment from America's history. Since the Ten Commandments have formed the basis of civil law in the Western world for over 2,000 years, an individual is more likely to find a copy of them in a government building rather than a religious one. Yet amazingly, numerous rulings over recent years now make it unconstitutional to display the commandments in many public arenas. Consider what Founding Father John Adams said about this. He declared, "The moment the idea is admitted into society that property is not as sacred as the laws of God, anarchy and tyranny commence. If thou shalt not covet, and thou shalt not steal were not commandments of heaven, they must be made inviolable precepts in every society before it can be civilized or made free. John Adams believed that no society could remain civilized if separated from the Ten Commandments.
For more information on God's hand in American history, contact Wall Builders at 1-800-8-REBUILD.
Let the torch of freedom burn.
Welcome back to Constitutional Live. We're going to do a quick review of what we covered last night. We had a great time here at Independence Hall. Wonderful class here with us. We covered a lot of ground, so I just want to do a quick review of what we did last night, and then we'll jump into our new section. Of course, last night we talked about our purpose, what this class is all about. We're the quick start guide to the Constitution. We're not doing the year-long class. We're not doing the three-year law degree. We're just doing the quick start guide so that we know where to plug things in. We know how to be active as citizens to participate in our government. So we went through a quote by this guy. Who remembers who we were talking about? Who's this guy on the screen? Help me out. Anybody? I heard it in the back. You got it. John Jay, exactly. First Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, one of those authors of the Federalist Papers. And here's the quote that drove everything we did last night, and it will again tonight as well. He said, every member of the state, so that's all of us, ought diligently to read and to study. Again, remember that what we talked about was the study part means we're going to crack open the minds of the founding fathers. We're going to get inside there and find out what were they thinking, what did they intend, what were these guys actually trying to do with the words they put into the Declaration and the Constitution. So read and study the Constitution, and then teach the rising generation to be free. I love that phrase, that idea of passing the torch of freedom to the next generation. That's all the time we have for today, folks. We are in the first part of a four-part series from Constitutional Live that deals with the presidency. This is one particular chapter in that 12-hour program, and we're going to share that chapter with you this week over the course of four programs. So tomorrow we'll pick up right where we left off today. If you're interested in learning more about Constitutional Live, you can visit that website, constitutionallive.com, or just go to wallbuilders.com, and there's a link there on the homepage. This is our opportunity to learn about the Constitution and the founding principles of America, but then also to take action and begin to teach people around us about those constitutional principles and do our part in restoring this constitutional republic. We hope you've enjoyed today, this first part. Be sure you tune in over the next 3 days for the rest of Constitutional Live with David Barton and Rick Green. You've been listening to Wall Builders Live.
We stand undivided forever.